Hello, I'm Magenta Pixie, and thank you for joining me today as we create a sacred circle of sharing, connection, teaching, and learning, and love. Enjoy. Hello, I am Magenta Pixie, and I'm a conduit, as we all are, for the higher density. I communicate with a collective of beings who present themselves to me originally as white winged beings, nine of them. And although they didn't give me a name as to who they were, when I referred to them as the white winged collective consciousness of nine, as that's what they are, they were more than happy with that title. In the truest reality, they go beyond the archetypal image that they present to me, and they tell me they are the nearest way we could perhaps relate to them is that of geometry, an intelligent geometry that exists throughout the universe and throughout our bodies and is in our DNA. In effect, they could be referred to as the voice of our DNA or the out-of-time aspect of our DNA that knows no past, present, or future, that is connected to the oneness of all. But I affectionately refer to them as the white-winged collective consciousness of nine. They've been communicating with me in various different forms for about 18 years and for about 9 years, maybe a bit less, as the white winged collective consciousness of nine. Previous to that, I communicated with what I thought at the time was one spirit guide. I communicated with a spirit guide who told me he was from fifth density. The white winged collective consciousness of nine are from sixth density, moving currently into seventh density, as we, humanity, move from third density into fifth, through fourth, and on another level into fourth. My very first memories of anything spiritual, magical, esoteric, anything like that, I was 7 years old, and I was just playing with my tennis ball. I used to have two tennis balls, and I used to juggle them against the wall and make up stories, and I used to spend the majority of my time living in a fantasy world of stories, either reading books or creating my own stories. I was doing this the majority of the time. Even in school, when I was sat in class, I would be making up stories in my mind. I wasn't really in third density in the real world at all as a child. And at the age of seven, I remember I had a drink with me at the time, and I remember looking at my cup, and all of a sudden, I just started to try and move it with my mind, not my hands. And I tried really hard to focus on this cup and move it. And I remember thinking, and this is a really vivid memory for me, I remember thinking, why can't I move the cup with my mind? I used to be able to do this. I used to be able to move objects with my mind. I didn't have to use my hands. Why can't I do it anymore? And I remember being really frustrated and having memories of doing this. And I was frustrated, I was angry and upset at the age of seven that I felt I'd lost an ability or a natural part of myself that should be there, wasn't there. That's how I felt at seven. I even remember going down and talking to my mother and saying, why can't I move this cup with my mind? I used to be able to do this. And she would say, oh, you're talking about telekinesis. She said, there's no such thing. Or something like that. And I guess I just dismissed it, really. So that was my first memory of having cellular memory. And at the age of seven, I knew that there was a natural ability, a rightful ability that a human being should have. And for some reason, I didn't have it anymore. Going a little bit further, I would have been about maybe seven and a half to eight. I'd started reading books by Enid Blyton, which were wonderful books to keep the imaginative aspect of the child's mind alive. And if you have a starseed child of your own, books like Enid Blyton's or books that write in a similar way with similar stories. There are other authors that write this way. Will keep the child's imagination alive, and the imagination is the landing pad to hyperspace and to the inner worlds and into the DNA and the cosmos. So if you want to keep your child's starseed energy and thought processes alive and connected, then these books are great. So I was reading Enid Blyton, and I would read about fairies at the bottom of the garden. And when I read these stories, for me, they weren't fantasy. They weren't story. They were real. I knew that the person writing this book was coming forward with a message, and that these fairies were real. And I knew that I knew them, and I knew that I, on some level, could communicate with them. I knew they existed, and I knew they were real. I could feel them, but I couldn't see them. And I expected, as a human child, to be able to see them with my actual eyes. And that didn't happen. But I would sit at the bottom of my garden, and I would talk to them, and I would say, I know you're there. I know you're there. I can feel you. Please talk to me. Why won't you talk to me? I know you're there. I remember sitting in the long grass at the bottom of my garden, pleading with them to show themselves, feeling them all around me, hundreds of them, and loving them, and feeling them loving me back. But because I was expecting to see them materialize before me physically, that at the time, I guess, was a block to the communication. Because if I had relaxed and allowed my feeling to become my communication, which is what I do now with the nine, then I would have been communicating with the fairies at age seven. But I guess I did communicate with them, but not the way I do now. So that was around seven or eight. And then I suppose the next memory I have of any kind of exploration of that level would be my father was a hypnotist. He was actually an opera singer and an actor in the theatre, and he got interested in hypnosis, and he would hypnotise the members of the company that he was working with. And it was very much, I think, an experimental stage in his life. And I was his daughter at the time, and I would have been around seven, around about the age of seven, when I had the memories of the telekinesis and the fairies. That was the first time he used hypnosis on me, but I didn't know that he was doing that. It would be for things like I'd have a headache, and he would say, if you hold my ring, you'll find that my ring is magic. Can you feel the magic in my ring? And I'd say, oh, yes, yes, I can. And I absolutely would. I remember him saying, close your hand around my ring. Can you feel the ring getting hotter and hotter and hotter? And I would drop the ring because it would burn my hand. What was happening here is my father was studying psychology and the psychology of the mind. And because I was a naturally sensitive starseed indigo child, I responded to this. So it was a great subject for him to work with. And then, of course, once he had that suggestible ability in me, and once I had accessed that ability to heal myself at that point, then he would just say, I'll touch your head and your headache will go, and my headache would go. So he'd work like that with me. I was 11, though, when he first taught me self-hypnosis. Well, first of all, he would take me into hypnosis, just like by this time. By the time I was 11, he'd worked with many clients, so he was not experimenting anymore and learning, but he was, you know, practiced and good at his art. And he would take me into hypnosis, and one of the first things was, I was not swimming at school, still with armbands at the age of seven, at the age of 11, and all my friends were swimming, and I felt really sort of silly and wanted to learn to swim. So he was hypnotizing me to learn to be able to have the confidence to swim in the water and get those armbands off and sort of progress beyond where I should have been, because that was quite behind for an 11-year-old not to be swimming. So that was the hypnosis. That was the aim of the hypnosis. But what actually happened was something quite strange. He told me with his subjects in hypnosis, he had great success with them. And whatever it was he was working with them for, there's a high percentage of good outcome. But never did they communicate back with him. But when he hypnotized me, I would go into hypnosis and the subconscious aspect of me would come forward and would communicate back to him. And I remember being in this sort of semi-trance state where the imagery that I had in my mind was of the two hemispheres of the brain kind of moving or separating in some way, where the conscious side of me that operated when I was awake would take a back seat and the subconscious aspect of me would come forward to the forefront. I had a name for this aspect of me. I would call it Subby, short for subconscious, because I understood that it was the subconscious mind, the age of 11. And Subby would talk back to my father, and he would ask many questions about me. How does Pixie feel about this, or how does she feel about that, and is she ill, or is she healthy? And answers would come to my father. So I guess that was my first step into channeling. A very similar process. Beyond the age of 11, as an indigo teenager, I had quite a challenging time. And I think those spiritual experiences I'd had as a child were put to one side as I went through the indigo path of not dealing with being in society, not dealing with school, being weird, being different, being odd, searching for people who were like me, looking in the areas of creative individuals such as the drama students and the theatre lot, which I became a big part of. So fast forward to through that process of growing up, I would have been about 26 when the next aspects of so-called channeling would have come to me. I would communicate with certain people and I would see silver lines coming out of my head and going above their head and sort of bypassing their head. And at the same time, they'd say things to me like, I don't understand what you're talking about. What do you mean? And I'd get quite frustrated with my communication with people. And then I'd have this voice saying to me, it's okay, they don't understand. And I would think, well, where did this voice come from? That wasn't me. That was something else. And I'd see these lines, and then I'd communicate with my father. When I communicated with him, I'd see the silver lines going into his mind, and he would reply, and the voice would say, he does understand. So I would have these deep communications with my father and with a very few group of people that I would meet in my life. These lines stayed with me for quite a while, wavy silver lines, silver geometric shapes, and they had intelligence. They were lots of spirals, lots of silver spirals would come to me, and that's when my dreams started becoming really profound. I didn't understand them, but they would be telling me all sorts of things, and some of those things would relate to what was happening in my life or in other people's lives, and other images that I had at the time I never could understand, but it was to do with some kind of evolution occurring on our planet. So the next step after that for me, as more and more of this started to happen and I experimented with the odd bit of marijuana, which opened me up even more to deep clairvoyance, psychic understanding of people I would be around, telepathy. All these things were happening when I was taking marijuana to an extreme point, to a point that I couldn't cope with, and I became quite frightened. And I also experienced darker aspects of that realm, beings talking to me, shadow beings. And I went through quite a intense fear vibration dealing with the realm, the lower realms of the astral existence, or rather, you know, indulging in the fear pathway, the fear timeline. And that expanded over quite some time. And then eventually, I think I'd seen an advert in the newspaper for the local spiritualist group, and there would be mediums there. And I was really, really interested in going along. And my brother was on a similar path to me. We were living in a flat together at the time. In fact, it was my brother who rescued me from sort of the marijuana fear stroke dark experience and sort of brought me back to reality. And I kind of stopped that. No more marijuana anymore, ever. We went along to the spiritualist churches, which I found a great education into this realm that I'd been kind of dealing with and that had been calling me since I was sort of 7 years old. And I remember picking up all sorts of things when the medium was working, and I remember feeling, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be a medium like him, but not in the same way. I'll be different. And then the voice would come back to me and say, you will be a medium for other mediums. I didn't understand at the term channels, light workers, wanderers. So medium was the word they would have communicated with. But obviously I'm a light worker for other light workers and a conduit for other conduits. I went through all sorts of experiences then. And then one day I walked into a bookshop and I knew that there was a book in that shop that I had to read. I still get this now, and I'm sure you, if you're on this path, you will have experienced this. You go into a bookshop and you know there's a book in there calling you. And literally, you'll walk into the end of the shop and it'll fall off the shelf onto the floor. And this is exactly what happened. It was kind of sticking out. The book was kind of sticking out of the bookshelf, and you go to touch it and it'll fall on the floor, and you'll get this energy and you know that you're supposed to read it. And it was called channeling. And that was kind of the real start of my conscious channeling experience. And I would pick up the book. I read the book from cover to cover. So I would go into this meditation, and after several weeks of experimentation with meditation and meeting various different entities, I finally connected with my true guide. So I made that connection, but it would only happen in meditation. And then one day I remember my brother asked me a question, and I thought, okay, I'll ask my guide that question when I get into meditation. And as I was talking to him about what I thought my guide might say, he was there. My guide was there, and I was channeling. And it was it was almost as though the connection had been there, but it wasn't instant. It wasn't in real time. I had to go into meditation, connect, come out, do this, connect, come out. And all of a sudden, it was there. And I could feel the stream of energy and the stream of communication coming through me, coming through an aspect kind of around my neck or head is where it would come through. And then I would start to feel it in my body, throughout my emotional body, through the chakras. It was a very different way of... it was a different experience than I'd had before, and I knew I was in communication. I could see my guide, I could feel him. And that's when I started channeling. And I was really surprised, because I didn't expect it to happen in real time. It always happened in meditation. And I remember saying to my brother, he's here, my guide's here, I can see him, I can talk to him. So from then on, from that point, which was 18 years ago from now, I worked with my spirit guide, who told me he was from fifth density, and he presented as a Zulu warrior. Actually, he originally presented as a Red Indian. And I remember saying to him, oh, I don't want a Red Indian. Everyone's got a Red Indian. I knew that a lot of the channels and mediums out there had a Red Indian. I wanted to be different. So he changed his presentation and presented as a Zulu warrior, which I felt very comfortable with, because I had a past life link with this Zulu warrior image, and I was shown a lifetime where I had a connection. But I also had a connection with the Indian as well. That's why the Indian came to me, and I had a North American Indian past life, and memories of that came back as I worked with my guide. And I worked with my guide throughout my life, really. Whenever I've called upon him, he's been there. Sometimes certain things would happen in my life and the connection would go and I couldn't get the link. Sometimes for months, and then the link would come back again, and it was there, and it guided me through my life. And I worked, I always knew I was working in a training capacity. I was always told it was a training capacity. And then I would meet various people in my life who would help me focus that training in a stronger way. And then I would say it was probably around about 9 years ago that my spirit guide evolved into a higher frequency, and I actually saw the evolution before me, morphing from the Zulu warrior entity into one white-winged being. And that stayed with me for a while, a few months, just one white being, which I thought was an angel. I thought my spirit guide had morphed into an angel. It was the same entity, but it was the sixth density aspect of the fifth density consciousness. So on another level, it was a different entity. And then the white angel eventually would morph into a collective of beings, and I counted them, and there were nine. And that's when I had the nine with me. And then they worked with me for a long time together. Mostly personal things to do with my own life, my own relationships, specifically romantic relationships. They would guide me through them and talk to me. And sometimes I would doubt them. Sometimes I would question them, which is good to do. Sometimes I wouldn't believe the things they said, and then through my life I would have experiences, and they would tell me certain things, and it got to the point where this one particular situation arose in my life where my guides were telling me one thing and everyone else around me, including the person involved in this situation and the actual events in life, were all showing me the opposite. And I found it very, very difficult to find that trust in the nine, that what they were saying was true, because everything in life was showing me that it wasn't. And it's great that I had this experience, because obviously the same thing is happening now with our ascension evolution on Earth. There are many things out there that are presenting in one form, and nothing in life is showing us that it's presenting in any other form. And my nine will show me a different outcome than what we think we see. If I hadn't had this personal experience in my life, I don't know if I would have found that trust in them. But in this personal experience, things played out the way that they told me they would. But during that teaching from my guides, they didn't just teach me, they didn't just show me a future that just came true. They taught me how to manifest the future that was available. They showed me that there is more than one future. They showed me the different timelines and how I could get to this future, and how, if I didn't do this, I would manifest that future. In fact, what they were showing me was so difficult for me to achieve, because what I actually had to do, the future that I really wanted, I had to believe and know that it would manifest. I had to live my life as if it had already manifested. And at the same time, I had to let it go, not mind if it manifested at all, and be more than happy with the other future manifesting. And I remember saying, I can't do it. It's too hard. I can't do it. And they would say to me, if you want this future, this is the only way. So I did it. I did find a way to let go of that future that I really wanted, truly, not just pretending, truly, really be happy with that future, see in that alternative future an equal happiness of a different nature. And I lived my life as if that timeline had already manifested. And sometimes it would get to the point where I just couldn't believe it would work. And I would say, how much longer is this going to take to actually manifest? And my guides would help me through it. The reason I'm telling you this now is it's so significant for what's happening to us collectively. It's the same thing. It happened to me individually and personally with something I need not share. It's just mine. And now it's happening collectively in the same way. But because it happened to me individually, I have the trust. I know how to manifest the future I want to experience on this planet. I know how to manifest the future that I want to experience in 2012 at the ascension culmination point, December 21st, 2012, and beyond that. I know the future I want to manifest, and I know how to manifest it, and I will. I know I have to let it go. I know I have to see other alternate timelines and work with them as well. And the reason I know how to do that is because it happened to me before. It's the same thing. It's just collective and not individual. And I am here to, through my guides, through my experiences, teach you how to do this, because on one level, we will all experience different realities. So I can go ahead and experience this timeline and be the only one that does. That's not really what I want. I want to experience this collectively with all my soul family, all the other aspects of me that have incarnated as you. And that is what I see happening when the nine show me the timeline for our future, that is culminating around December 21st, 2012, and beyond that, the future that I see, that I know can be manifested, and that has to be believed in, lived as if it's already manifested, and let go of too, and not clung on to. I know that that timeline will manifest for us. And I'm here to help you to have that knowing as well. And it's, as I said before, it's not just about knowing it's going to manifest and sit back and think, well, it's going to manifest. We take a proactive role in that, and we create that manifestation. We create that manifestation through our own ability to work with the law of attraction and work with the intelligent frequencies and the intelligent consciousness around us. And that's what we're doing globally, and that's how my personal experience relates to what I'm doing now. How I moved into that was a case of, I started learning about the ascension process around about the same time when I started channeling, when I first started channeling 18 years ago when I first met my guide. It was 1993. I remember that year significantly because there was some kind of significant gateway, some kind of opening of an energy gateway in our consciousness in 1993. And I'm shown that many of the way showers and conduits and wanderers and light workers had significant experiences in 1993. It was kind of a real shift for them as well. So there was a collective movement in 93, and that's when it happened to me. And around that time, I started learning about the ascension through other channeled works, and I read Barbara Marciniak and Norma Milanovic, and I read The Crystal Stair by Eric Klein, and other channeled works. And I really believed that this ascension process would take place in my lifetime. And I had no doubt. And I really thought it would happen sort of now, you know, maybe in 6 months. This was 18 years ago. And I was looking for signs, and I got the signs. I got the signs everywhere that the ascension process was taking place. And my guides would say to me, my guide, I had one at the time, this is a rehearsal. I will let you know, because I was communicating with one, I will let you know when it's the real thing. Because I did a lot of drama, my guide would liken a lot of things to theatre terminology. So this is a rehearsal. Yeah, this is a rehearsal, and it's a dress rehearsal. We'll let you know when it's performance time. And I waited and I waited and I waited, and I never got told when performance time was. And I kind of got to the point in my life where I gave up, I guess, a little bit. Not gave up, but I thought perhaps it was all a fantasy. It was all a pipe dream. It wasn't going to happen. I'd had this silly experience, and it was great and wonderful while it lasted. It was actually quite blissful, but, you know, nothing's happened. And that's kind of how I saw it until 2008, beginning of 2008, around about January. I started communicating with the nine a lot, and I'd been doing a bit of research on the internet. By this time, obviously, I had the internet, and I would do some research into 2012. And I started looking at the potential. The stories I was reading at the time were talking about the potential destruction of the planet, cataclysmic events such as volcanoes and earthquakes, and how we needed to possibly build some kind of bunker in the garden or get to some kind of high mountain. We needed to sort of compile big sacks of rice and bury them in the forest. And, you know, there was just going to come a time when there would be such devastation on this planet. And if we wanted to survive, we needed to be good at self-survival and all this kind of stuff. And the more I researched, the more I got to the point where I realised, you know, that there's truth in this. And I got quite sad. And I looked around at everything around me. My little granddaughter, she would have been 2 at the time. And I thought, she's so perfect. Why? Why would all this be wiped out? Everything's so perfect and there's so much bliss and joy and wonder in this life. Why? Why would it be wiped out? And I got really sad. And my guides weren't there. I was with the 9 at that point. My guides weren't there. I thought, why aren't they with me? And then I was shown that for some reason I needed to experience this. I needed to experience the absolute loss and sadness of this planet. And then they came forward, and the feminine goddess aspect of the 9, who is a beautiful female, white, extraterrestrial entity, she took my hand and she said, it's not going to be like that. Let us show you. And then I worked with them for several days in intense channeled moments, and they showed me the timeline that it is going to be like. Then they showed me the different timelines that were available and why people were picking up the interpretations of this cataclysmic situation. And then they showed me how real that was, and how real it wasn't, and how we can manifest a timeline that's completely different, and how these channeled higher knowings and memories that many people are getting are interpreted in the human form in different dimensional ways, such as the third dimensional interpretation of needing to get up the top of a mountain with your family to escape the flood of water down below and stop yourself drowning can be interpreted in a multidimensional, truthful way as raising your frequency within, as you are the mountain. You raise your frequency within and you rise to the top of that pinnacle within you, that place of light with your family, and that the energy flow, the flood of water that's going to engulf you is a flood of energy that will engulf you, and that you welcome being engulfed by that energy because it's coming into our entire planet and all of humanity, and it's something to be welcomed. Now, I'm also told that the cataclysmic timeline is also a potential future, and that we are on a course for whichever timeline we want to manifest, really. But because of the collective light currently on our planet that are shared by those who see the things I see, and we would call this group of people wayshowers, wanderers, light workers, starseeds, indigos, crystal children, the aware ones, the awakened ones, the activated ones. I don't really know how there are so many words to describe us. In the Bible, I think the metaphor is the 144,000. There is also another metaphor in the Bible, the people of Israel. There is another metaphor in the Bible, the Christians. That is the group of people who are DNA activated, who have memory, who have knowing, whose heart chakras are open, who walk within service to others' alignment. And if you're listening to this now and you're resonating with what I'm saying, then you're one of those people. And there are many, many, many of us waking up right now. Many, many, many of us are sharing this knowing to so many others. So the knowing is spreading consciously, and the light is spreading within our DNA at the same time. So once I realized that there was another alternative for our future, not this cataclysmic future that I'd been reading about on the internet, but this other future that the 9 were showing me, and I trusted them, they said to me, you've been in training all the years you've worked with us. You've been training, but now is the time to go to work. So training continues, training always continues, but from that phase, training stops, you go to work. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, now is the time to take the stance in life as a clairvoyant medium. That's what you are. And I'd never done that. I'd kept that side of me hidden. I hadn't told people, except the people I knew really well, or the people that I might have done a little, gone to a little New Age fair and done some readings. And, you know, it wasn't well known, even amongst some of my friends that have known me for years. They didn't know that I did that. They didn't know that I channeled. I kept it secret from most people. And the nine were telling me to sort of go public with that. And that was their words. They actually said, it's time to go public. And I didn't really know what they meant by go public. And then they said that I had to join a group of others that were like me, and that it's time to find them, and that they were also being told by their guidance that they would join the group now. This was the great gathering, the great coming together. And now was the time that the coming together was occurring. And I'm thinking, well, I hardly know anyone that's like me around here. Where are these people? You know, do I need to travel to find them? Is there a local group sort of half an hour away that I don't know about of these like-minded people all channeling? I mean, where are they all? And they pointed to the internet. That's where they are. They're on the internet. Okay. And that's when I started hunting around and looking and joining communities and looking for this family of people. And they also said to me at that point about the ascension. They said, remember, we told you before that you would experience this ascension process in your lifetime, and that in 1993 it was a rehearsal, and that we would let you know when it was this was the real thing. Well, now it's the real thing. This is the performance. And I just couldn't believe that I was hearing it, because I'd kind of given up on that. It'd been 18 years. And I remember phoning my brother. My guides have told me this is it. It's the ascension. It's the performance now, you know. And I uploaded my first video to YouTube in 2008. And brought through as much information from the nine that I could. And I answered questions from people who've sent me global questions, and I answered personal questions. And I still do that now. And that's what I'm doing. And that's my role here in this incarnation. And it's the role of many others as well, as this is how that information is spread, and this is how this DNA activation is spread. This is how the light, the service to others frequency, is spread amongst us, amongst humanity. And from what I'm told from the nine, things are going well. What is channeling? Channeling is something everyone does. There are many levels to it, and there are many different aspects of yourself that you can channel. When you are involved in deep creativity and you're painting, drawing, writing poetry, writing stories, creating music, you are channeling. But there, as I said, there are different levels to that channeling. Is this the imagination? Well, again, there are different levels to the imagination. And that runs in line with what channeling is. Channeling is communication with the imagination. Channeling is the imagination communicating back to you. When you say the imagination, we've been taught all our lives as children in this reality to think it's just some fabricated jumble of nonsense that exists in our head. And it means nothing. That's not the case. The imagination is the key to the door into hyperspace. The imagination contains the landing pad into the higher realities and the higher densities. That's the way we communicate with the beings that exist in hyperspace, the beings that exist in outer space. We communicate with them through the channel that links into our thought process. Through the imagination. The imagination is our thought process. Within that reality, we have sight, which comes from the pineal gland. Within the brain, we have hearing. It's a clairaudient form of listening. that's just the way we interpret those energy signals coming into us from our imagination. So if you want to know what channeling is, in a sense that I do, it is the communication with a aspect of yourself that goes beyond the boundaries of what we know as just the physical human. When we look at that aspect, it's definitely an aspect of ourselves. It's us. It's a deeper aspect of ourselves. So you could say, we're communicating with the subconscious mind. We're communicating with the psychological part of ourselves that has noticed things that the conscious part hasn't. We're communicating with the dream part of us. All those things are true. On another level, that aspect is actually a separate being. It's outside of you as well as inside of you. So you can often go on these light worker forums and you'll see these arguments, and this is probably one of the biggest argument is, why communicate with a being outside of you, such as an ascended master or an angel? Why are you talking to something outside of you? Divinity is within. And the other person will say, well, I speak to an ascended master. He is a great, wonderful being, and he's completely outside of me, lives on another planet. And, you know, he rides on a huge light ship around the cosmos. And then the other person will say, but divinity is within you. It's not outside of you. And that person will say, well, no, it's not. It's outside of you. It's an ascended master. Both those things are true. The divinity is within. The communication takes place within and also without. What the true aspect is that you are communicating with is your DNA. You are communicating with your DNA. That's the aspect of the DNA that the scientists on our third density planet don't see and don't understand. When they look at our DNA, they see 5% of our DNA, and the rest they call junk. It's the junk DNA that you're communicating with, which is like quite funny that it's called junk. That's what's being communicated with. Now, that aspect of your DNA is multidimensional. It's deeply intelligent. It's out of time. It's non-linear. It is the same space. It's outside of what we see as space. So the dimensions of its space is multidimensional. So when you communicate with your DNA within your body, you are also communicating with an entity that exists many light years in our future, many light years into space, on another planet, in another star constellation, in another time frame and another timeline. That being is in your DNA. This is because DNA is an entity in itself, an intelligent entity in itself, that is spread throughout the entire cosmos, throughout the entire galaxy. And it seeds itself onto different planets, different star systems, different realities that host biological life. It seeds itself there. And it's able to communicate with all the aspects of itself. That aspect within DNA is also known as what scientists would call the God particle. It's the same thing. It's source energy. It's the energy of oneness. And within that DNA is the knowledge and the memory of everything that has ever happened and everything that ever will happen, because it's non-linear. It operates in one point. That is the zero point. That zero point knowledge is accessible by any being that holds DNA. If you have DNA in your body, which if you're human right now on Earth listening to me, you have DNA. And within your DNA is exactly the same thing that's in mine and everyone else's. That's the zero point aspect, the DNA itself, that which creates itself. That which created DNA, which is itself. That is creation and the created existing at the same time. Now, when you communicate with that, that's channeling. You can communicate with that without knowing. You hear this voice and think, was that me? Did I just think that? I didn't feel like I just thought that. Well, it must be because it sounded like my voice, but how did I know that? That's channeling. When you paint a beautiful painting and you look and you think, wow, did I really paint that painting? I can't believe that came from me. What a wonderful feeling it was painting it though. I'm going to paint another one. That's channeling. When you write a poem and you look at the raw state of that poem and you see the flow within it and it inspires you and it opens your heart and you are pleased with what's been created, that's channeling. When you feel something that you know and yet there's no explanation as to how you know it, that's channeling. When you know the telephone's going to ring and you know it's going to be your mother on the end of the phone and then the phone rings and it's your mother, that's channeling. Channeling's just one word to explain this. And to be honest with you, I don't necessarily particularly like the word channeling that much, because channeling tends to give the impression that you are kind of in the New Age community and that you are talking to an ascended master or an angel that's outside of you and it's going to come through and tell us all about love and light and bliss, and it's not really got any grounding in reality. So channeling does have a negative connotation to it, because that's an unbalanced view of the New Age community. That's an unbalanced view of... It might be a correct view of certain aspects of the New Age community. There may be people who do that. That's not where I come from. I don't even necessarily like the word New Age either. In all honesty, from the person I am, I would happily reject the word channeling and that I'm a channel, and reject the word New Age. I embrace those labels because they explain what I do. They don't explain what I do fully. They are just one label of many. I'm also a conduit. And believe it or not, that's very scientific. What I do has science behind it. And I'm sure many of you listening to that are probably laughing. And I know it's funny, but it's true. There is science behind what I do, and science explains what I do. If you wish to have... some research to back that up, then look for the teachers out there that are teaching about our reality from a scientific viewpoint. There are those scientists that understand that God particle that I spoke about, the DNA. They understand what the DNA is. They understand the God particle. They may not necessarily be researching extraterrestrial communication or angelic communication or ascended masters. They may not necessarily be sitting in meditation with crystals all around their feet, but they are still communicating with and researching and looking at the same energy. And to those scientists, I would say, if you don't feel you are communicating with the energy you are looking at, I would say to you that you are. And I will tell you how you are, because the minute you look at that energy, you communicate with it, because it loves being observed. It loves being looked at. It wants to be understood. It wants to be seen. And it wants to be communicated with. That's why you're here. You are here to communicate with that aspect of yourself, whether you do it through angelic communication, meditation, lying with your feet in a river, staring at the stars, or whether you do it through scientific means, experimentation, looking through the Large Hadron Collider or any other scientific experiment, however you do it, or through religion, through your moving forward into oneness with your God, the God that you follow, it's all the same thing. That energy is the higher aspect of you, the God source aspect of you. And it wants to be communicated with, loves being seen, it loves being viewed, and it doesn't want to be worshipped at all. It wants to greet you as a friend. It wants to shake hands with you as an equal partner and say, hello, you are me, in third density, and I am you in the higher densities. And isn't it great that we recognize one another? That is how source energy learns. That is how the oneness experiences itself and amasses knowledge. That's all it wanted to do. The oneness wanted to seek to experience itself, to experience all and everything, and to know all and everything, and to learn with the greatest curiosity, the curiosity of a child. And because that oneness is in within each and every one of us, in our DNA, not only can we access memories of our past lives and of what happened when we were a child, and not only can we access the past lives of other people by looking at their energy, we can access the memory of that time when we were, or rather where we are, the oneness, existing in that moment when we decided to experience ourselves and learn all and everything. We can remember that. We can remember and see and look from that viewpoint, each and every one of us. That is channeling. And you don't have to use the word channeling to explain it. Why is there skepticism and mistrust regarding so-called channeling? The reason for that is because this oneness that I speak about has manifested in many, many different forms, an infinite number of ever-increasing forms. And those forms have manifested here in third density on Earth throughout our history. Now, many, many hundreds of years ago, there were groups of individuals who understood this. They had access to their memories, and they were channeling, if you want to use that word. They had access to their memories. They understood that it was the DNA. And some of these groups understood this and worked with the loving aspect of that energy. Some of these groups understood this and worked with the energy that would better their own evolution. So there became a duality on planet Earth amongst the third density people and amongst the extraterrestrial energies that were helping the third density people at that time. There became a duality of service to self and service to others. And that duality has operated right up until today and operates now. Now, the service to others group wished to share this experience with all. And they wanted to share their happiness and their bliss. They had spiritual riches and they wanted to give it away to everyone and share it. But the service to self group saw great potential in what they knew. They saw great power in what they knew. So they sought to control the truth and not share it. So both these factions have been operating in various guises and various forms for many, many, many years. So, of course, we have now groups of people with different beliefs, different religions. Those that have been given the Bible, again, within those that follow the Bible, there are and other religious teachings and other religious books like the Bible. Within that group, there are service to others beings who want to share their truth. And when they read the Bible, they see the truth. They see the Christ energy and they follow their path in utter service and love through biblical imagery. And the universe, the DNA, hyperspace has communicated with them through more biblical archetypal form. But that's been fine because they have their soul has been given growth through that path. There are others that have looked at the Bible and other religious paths that have deliberately distorted the truths and created something that would cause confusion. So, of course, when you say you're channeling an entity or a spirit, it does say in the Bible and in other religious texts that that's wrong, and that that's the work of the devil, the work of Satan. That's been placed into the Bible. This devil, Satan energy has been placed into the Bible as a falsehood to lead you astray. There's polarity, darkness and light, and there is that has developed into a polarity, service to self and service to others. But if you see that as angels of bliss or devils of Satan, both of those are unbalanced views. You can't just follow an angel of bliss and reject all darker frequencies. You can't just look at something and think that's the devil, that's Satan operating, and reject what's truly the light. Unfortunately, those that have followed this path are very indoctrinated in their belief, and that's the way it is with them, and there's nothing you can do to shift their viewpoint in this lifetime. They will need more incarnations and more soul growth and more learning to come to that point. They're all us. They're all us at different aspects of growth, and all of them must be loved and accepted. But they will throw at you, if you are standing within light in this way, they will throw at you their ridicule and their anger and their teasing, and sometimes quite violent hatred. They believe that you are a representative of the devil and that they are a representative of God, and there's nothing that you can do to shift that viewpoint. So it's there, and it's something that we have to accept. The truest way to explain that is service to self and service to others. And a lot of the people who are indoctrinated, it's been done deliberately by those who wish to gain power. And what's happened in our history is the service to self groups that have had the minority control have done quite well. They have managed to regain power. And if they have spotted any service to others being that's come forward and sort of shone their light, so to speak, they've kind of vanquished their flame and stopped them. Of course, now we're in 2010 and things are very different. There is a large, ever-growing expansion of service to others energy now, more so than there has ever been on this planet in this density. There were times when we did have this on this planet in the Atlantean and Lemurian and similar civilizations. But right now, in third density, in the reality we know, this is the largest group of service to others that we have had. And within the service to self factions, you have a real divide, because you've got some that are exactly the same as they were thousands of years ago. They want the power and the knowledge, and they want to keep it for themselves, and they don't want anyone else to have it. They don't like the service to others group growing, and they're going to do everything they can to stop it. But you have actually got other groups now that are changing and thinking, well, we know what our divinity is, because some of these service to self practitioners do have divinity. It's different from service to others, but it's still an aspect of the divine, because the divine is oneness, so everything is within it. And as it seeks to know itself and distorts itself and divides itself, we come to a polarity of a service to self aspect of it. So that divinity is there. And some of those people or entities will look at the service to others with respect and will think, well, I'll let you do your thing. You know, I'm not going to stop you. And then there are others who are switching over to service to others as well and want to break free from service to self. So that's all kind of going on right now. And because of that group, that's why we have ridicule towards those that are channeling. And that's why we have people who will see it as the work of Satan. How can you trust the source that you are working with, your guides? Right, well, That trust comes like any other relationship. You meet someone, and even if you get good vibes about them, will you fully give them your trust? There has to be some kind of relationship, some kind of working relationship, or some kind of interaction. And within that interaction, you build trust. It's exactly the same with the source energy that comes to you, the DNA aspect, out of time aspect of yourself, your collective guidance. There has to be some working relationship. This takes place over many years as you learn to trust it. Now, the guidance itself, the collective guidance itself, would not expect your undivided and immediate trust. If you have a guidance with you that is saying, trust me, from day one of it appearing, then that is something to be wary of, because that is not what the true guides of light will say to you. They would welcome your lack of trust, not to the point where you are so untrustworthy of them that you don't want to communicate with them, but they will welcome your discernment. They will welcome your questioning of them, and they will seek to work with you, and they will not try to make you trust them by doing amazing feats or by you testing them and then proving themselves. It's a relationship. It's a relationship that takes time, and those relationships now in 2010 can be formed quickly by those who are activating quickly. With me, it has taken an 18-year, or if you go back to my very first experiences in childhood, it's taken a lifetime, really, to get to that place of trust with my collective guidance. So they would say to you, they would welcome your lack of trust, they would welcome your questioning, and they would seek to guide you into situations whereby you slowly learn to trust. Now, if you don't trust yourself as a person, if you don't trust who you are or know who you are or trust or know how you would act in given situations, then it's going to be incredibly difficult for you to trust your guidance, for your guidance works through you. Your guidance is you. So you need to have come to a place where you trust yourself. You trust yourself, you know yourself as well as you can. I mean, obviously, we are always seeking to know ourselves, but from the level of third density, we know ourselves. We love ourselves. If we can be in a place of loving ourselves and knowing ourselves and trusting ourselves, then we can make the step to trusting our guidance, because we will be open with our guidance. We'll say, look, I don't know as I agree with what you just said, and I don't know if I can certainly teach this to others. I'll take it on board. And then you will be given through the DNA that works physically outside of you in your life. In other words, synchronicity experienced through objects and other people in your life and events in your life. You will be given what is called the meaningful subjective experience. This is something that cannot be taken away from you, because it is utterly subjective and it's experienced by you only. It's also being experienced by everyone else, but because it's subjective, it's being experienced differently and uniquely to you. And as you go through that meaningful subjective experience and you pick up more and more synchronicity, you grow to trust your guidance. Now, there is more to that, because there are occasions where an entity, an aspect of yourself that is coming forward as an entity, can be of a mischievous, darker, or service to self nature. And that being can also lead you into synchronicity and signs to gain your trust, and then work through you in a negative way. There is also the aspect that you may be working with a collective, and as you believe you're bringing forward your trusted collective, you may slip in something from another entity. When you are working with that realm, all those things are possible. So even when you get to a place of trust, you are always aware and on the lookout for what is in your space. You have a gatekeeper, or some people call that a control, or some people would call that the protector. You work with aspects of yourself in a balanced way to keep that space clean. You then live what you are taught. You practice what you preach, or you walk the talk, is the saying. If you practice what you preach, if you live your life in the cleanest possible way, and you keep your psychic space clean, then there is little chance of an entity slipping. It's like a computer. If you don't have a good antivirus and a good firewall and good internet safety, then you could download viruses. That doesn't mean that your internet is corrupt. It means a virus slipped in. So all of those things must be made aware of. No one can give you that trust of your guidance. They can teach you and guide you like I am doing, but there's no one that can give you that trust but you. You work with your guides and your collective energy, your ET friends, your ET family, your DNA, your God force energy. You work with that yourself and you build up that trust and you learn the subtleties of the different energies. You learn when your space is clean and it's your guides and it's a service to others' love and that the connection is pure. You learn when there's distortion. You learn if something of a different frequency has slipped in. It's all matching what's in you. If you're channeling, but you're, you know, drinking every night and getting drunk and I don't know, if you're gossiping about other people, saying nasty things about people behind their back, eating really low density foods and smoking, and all those things can open up doorways to bring in aspects that are not clean and pure and focused with the guides you trust. So you've got to live it. You've got to live it physically, and it can't be done overnight. And it has to be reevaluated all the time. That's how you learn to trust. And no channel can sit there and say, look, trust my guidance. I'm telling you, I'm with this amazing group. They're totally full of love, service to others. They're here to tell us this, this, and this. I want you to trust them. No channel can say that to you. No medium, no light worker can say that to you. Because you are the person that has to learn to trust anything. The way the nine would ask you or guide you to trust is by experiencing many, many, many different aspects of them. As in, there's you and your own connection. There's other channels, other mediums and their connection. There's grounded researchers and scientists that are coming forward with information that's not necessarily channeled and their information. And you look at all that. You look at as many different angles as you possibly can, and you formulate a final opinion on something yourself, taking into account all these different aspects, and you work with your own higher guidance. It's a path. Learning to trust your guidance is a path, and it's not going to come with the click of your fingers, and it's not going to be given to you by anyone else. And if anyone says to you, I want you to trust me, trust my guidance, then give them the chance. But also be aware why they're asking for your trust, because trust is something that happens through friendship, through love, through unity. It's an emotion and it's a connection that comes naturally and it flows to you. And that's, it's a very important thing, trust, and it's a beautiful thing when you have it. And I can honestly say to you, I do trust my guidance. Do I trust my ability to channel? Yes, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm infallible and that I'm immune from picking up something that might be of a service to self or darker nature. I will say to you, and I will give you my commitment, that I will do my very best in my capacity to bring forward my messages. I will do my very best, and I will work at that as a utter commitment. But I can't give you a guarantee that everything I bring through is going to be pure. Who can? I know that there may be a certain amount of distortion within my channeled messages. I hope that that distortion is minimal. and the nine would tell me it's minimal, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm a perfect channel and that everything I say is true, because that wouldn't be correct. That wouldn't be human of me. So that trust is up to you. Another way of finding it is through what you resonate with, because trust can be felt. It's like love. It resonates within the heart chakra. It's like an inner knowing. When I first started learning to channel, I used to call it the yes feeling. It's just like a feeling inside, a tingling inside, that if you listen to it and listen to what it's saying, yes, this is right. This is true. That's the yes feeling. That's the inner knowing. And that is your resonating with something that you have seen or heard. And that, learning to trust that, will give you a greater trust into communicating with your guidance. Well, lots of people ask me if you need to have spiritual protection or psychic protection before you start channeling. And my answer to that would be, as a beginner, yes, I would say it's very important to do that. So ways to do that would be just to sit calmly, center yourself. And there are several visualizations you can do. One is to visualize a pyramid around you, and that you're actually sitting in a pyramid. The pyramid's coming to perhaps a few inches above your crown chakra, and that pyramid is white or golden or purple, very protective colors. And then you can begin your channeling session within the safety and the protection of that pyramid. The other is to simply ask your guides of higher light, the Christ Consciousness Collective around you, to surround you within a protective sphere where you are beginning to work with this energy, where you are training, and ask for their guidance and their protection. The other way is to simply just ask or affirm by saying, I now enter a protective space. I now bring to myself protective, spiritual protection, psychic protection. That's just three ways. Some people choose a totem animal or power animal, such as a bear, that have been with them for years in their dreams, visualizations, a tiger, a dragon, a fairy, whatever, an angel, whatever symbolizes protection and that you resonate with, that you relate with, to be with you as you begin. If you don't have experiences of a power animal or a totem animal or any kind of archetype you've been working with, then you can call upon Archangel Michael. The energy of Archangel Michael as an ascended master, as an ascended angelic frequency, is very much of protection to the human in third density. Archangel Michael is a powerful geometric, intelligent structure within the fabric of the universe, and is here for humanity at this time. So if you ask for Archangel Michael, he, she, the aspect of that angel, will be there for you. Now, as you progress further with channeling or meditation or any kind of work with these higher inner realms, you won't need to ask for protection in the same conscious way. It's kind of like driving, when you first drive a car. When you first get in that car, you're going to be, okay, there's the clutch, there's the handbrake, there's the mirror. Okay, so I'm going to pull away, I'm going to get the bite. Oh, I must look out for hazards. Oh, I must indicate. And it's all very conscious, and that's the way you begin driving. But after a while, as anyone who's been driving a car will tell you, you don't think about it, you do it. But you don't think to yourself, oh, I better be careful and look in the mirror and make sure my indicators are on when I turn left, in case I have an accident. You just drive, and you're confident, and you know, that you're going to be okay on the road, and if there is a hazard or there is some kind of situation that requires your quick reflexes while you're driving, then you automatically respond to that when it happens. Well, it's the same with moving within the higher dimensions and within that space. When you move into channeling, when you move into working in that space, working with meditation, and the same with dream work, OBEs, astral projection. After a while, you naturally create your own protection. It's within you, and you naturally move into the protective training ground or the protective working ground. You naturally take yourselves to higher dimensions, higher levels. You do not encounter darker beings. And if you do, you know how to navigate with them and you know how to work with them in your space. Darker beings have a purpose as well. They are there to teach us, even if they may be quite frightening at first when we see them. There is always a positive aspect to them being there. And any experience within that realm that may cause you fear, concern, worry, or uncertainty, there's a learning experience in that every time. When I first entered into working this way, I had no one to teach me how to navigate the darker realms or to how to deal with the fear. I didn't have a spiritual teacher or a spiritual mentor. There was no internet, there was no YouTube, there were no DVDs. I didn't have anyone. I had to navigate this myself. And yes, I did have frightening experiences. Looking back, they taught me. They taught me to navigate these realities. The experiences themselves taught me, and my guides were always there. They would allow me to go through an experience and then come to me. And the Nine always told me that in this training, we will never allow you to experience more than you are capable of experiencing. We will always watch you and guide you as your higher self, as your higher collective. And it's hard to believe that sometimes, because you think, wow, why did you let me go through that? Why didn't you come to me? Why didn't you rescue me? And yet, looking back, it's true. I never did have an experience that I couldn't handle. I'm here now, and I'm alive, and I'm working in that realm, and I've learned so much, and I trust my protection, and I trust my guides. So it's true, they never did allow me to experience anything that I couldn't handle. And I'm assured by the Nine that this is the case for all those who are starseeds, wanderers, indigos, crystals, awakened, activated human beings on Earth, walking this path, walking a spiritual path, walking a path of discovery, walking an ascension path, awakening to the energies of the shift, awakening to the energies of the higher density, awakening to 2012, and all those on a journey of discovery and knowledge. They will not be given more than they are capable of handling. If they feel they're in a situation where they can't handle what's happening to them, then that's a created magnetic response to anything that they are putting out. But even within that, I'm assured they can cope and handle what they're being given or what they've drawn to them. It's their choice whether they act in a way where they feel they can't cope, but they're always given opportunities and timelines and pathways and signs and guidance to show them that they can cope. And even if they feel cut off and alone in an experience, they're not. They're actually benefiting from that experience. And like I said, I've had some pretty scary experiences when I first awoke to this energy, when I was experimenting with all sorts of things when I was younger. But absolutely, they were learning experiences. So yes, when you first start channeling, when you first open to this energy, give yourself conscious protection. The crystal purple or lavender or violet pyramid is wonderful, very, very protective space to be. And that would probably be my recommendation. Obviously, I call the nine, but the pyramid is a structure. It's a geometric structure itself that gives you a private psychic space. And as you sit within that pyramid, you are protected. You are safe, enclosed, and other entities need a password to kind of get in and find you and to interact with you. They would need permission. And so the Violet Pyramid acts as a gatekeeper, as it were. And the other things to remember when you're first starting to channel is just to relax, get into as meditative a state as you can. Try to have not eaten a heavy meal right before you start channeling. I mean, it's not a good idea to sort of have a bar of chocolate, a packet of crisps and a glass of Coke and then sit down and think you can channel, because you may be able to, but your body is learning to work with toxins and trying to deal with all the not very good quality nutrition you've just put into your body. Have a glass of freshly squeezed fruit juice and vegetable juice by all means if you need something light, or a smoothie with good nutrition inside it. That's great, that can only help you. But when I need to work with another person, if I do my one-to-one consultations or I'm about to go on the radio show and I know that I'll have the nine with me, I don't eat anything like chocolate and crisps too close to my to the moment I'm going to channel. I can still do it, but I just know that it's not quite so pure and flowing as it will be, as if I haven't had anything to eat for an hour, or if I've had just had herbal tea or some juice, some fresh juice. So yes, make sure the body is physiologically and biologically in alignment with what you're about to do. And if you really have to have crisps and chocolate, eat it after your channeling session, or not at all, you know. Yes, the other thing to remember is to you can use amplification tools to help you to access the higher densities, and this amplifies the signal, acting as like a booster. So crystals, especially quartz crystals, nice sort of hand-sized quartz crystals, the smooth ones and the rough ones are both just as good. Orgonite. If somebody has gifted you a nice orgonite necklace, or you have a little orgonite a stone or orgonite pyramid or something that you can hold, that boosts the signal as well. Make sure the crystals and orgonite are cleansed, and that can be done by putting them out in the sun, by putting them in water for a while, by burying them in the garden, by putting them in sand, by wrapping them in black silk. If they've been sat by your computer for the last 2 weeks and then you go and take them, they're going to hold quite a lot of negative frequency that they've been holding to draw away from the computer, so that you're not getting that frequency. So don't use a crystal like that to amplify your signal. Make sure it's cleansed first, and make sure you feel happy as well. If you've had a bad experience that day, you've just had an argument with somebody over the telephone, or you've heard some bad news, that's probably not the best time for you to channel. When you are experienced and you've been channeling a long time, you know how to shift in and out of these spaces. So you can have a conversation with someone over the telephone that's not very productive and may upset you, and you can switch back into that calm, loving, awakened, light, zero space, and bring forth your guides and move into channeling, move into meditation, move into spiritual work. But that does take practice. I could never do that 10 years ago. If I'd had an upsetting moment, that would have affected me and my channeling and my symbolism coming from that world would have been mixed with my own internal processes. So I would have had a distorted message coming forward because I didn't know how to close certain doors and open others. And it does take time, and I've been doing this 18 years, so now I am at the point where I can, more or less. If I really felt I wasn't able to bring forward those messages or work in that space in a really centered way because something had affected me, then I wouldn't work. But more often than not, I can move into and out of that space quite quickly, but that takes practice. It's like anything else. One thing I can really liken that to, for a really good, useful tool for anyone out there who really is serious about moving into channeling, whether they're going to be bringing the messages forward to others or whether they're going to just be connecting with their higher self for their own guidance and their own growth, is acting. For all you actors out there, for all you students of drama, it's a wonderful training ground. Because when you're preparing to go on stage or to perform before the camera, and this is also the same in a certain respect to any performance, dance, music, but specifically with acting, you're getting into character. You're not yourself. You're actually playing the part of someone else, and the character you play may be nothing like you whatsoever. It takes time. New actors have to learn how to get into character and remove the feelings of their own self and all the things that have happened at home and that are happening in their life and move into creating the character. An actor, after a while, is able to switch in and out very quickly. They can have come from home, had some really bad news, had a really bad day, be telling all their fellow co-stars and fellow actors what a terrible day they've had, and then literally curtain up on stage in character, bang, audience would never have known anything. That's the same kind of process. So anyone out there who's listening to this who's doing acting or has done any kind of training in drama, that same switch, it's the same kind of thing. It's being able to move into an objective place, removing everything that's subjective, everything that's personal that's happened to you in your waking life or within any realm, and move into a clean space. And that's what channeling is about, and meditation, finding a clean space, a fresh space. You don't want to read a book with scribbles all over it. You won't be able to see the words on the page or the pictures on the page. You want to turn the page and see a nice, clean, easy to read book before you with vivid pictures and words that are able to be translated and understood easily. So that's what you're looking for before you move into working in those dimensions. Well, yes, when most people awaken or start to find out what's really happening on this planet and the situation humanity are in, some people will awaken spiritually first, and then they will discover knowledge. But for those people who awaken to truth, first of all, the truth seekers, by finding out that this planet has been controlled by other groups of individuals, often referred to as the Cabal, the Illuminati, the Dark Workers, the Dark Alliance, Black Ops, the Shadow Government, the Hidden Government, whatever. Those people, when they discover this, at first it can be, oh, I don't believe this, it can't possibly be true. Then they do more research and then they formulate an opinion, and usually they'll have come to a point where they've exhausted so many avenues of research, the only opinion they can make is this is true, this is real. They've looked at so many different angles, they've seen so many different speakers talk and bring forward their knowledge, whistleblowers, channels, lecturers. They've read books, they've watched DVDs, watched videos, and they've come to the conclusion that it's true, that we really have been controlled by this group, this organization of individuals, and they can become very, very angry. Now, on the one hand, this is good because that anger then spurs them on to start to learn. And one thing that they should then think is, well, how can we resolve this? When they move into the question, how can we resolve this? What can we do about it, basically? Are we just doomed because we're going to be controlled forever? Or is there anything we can actually do? Then they're on the right track, because then they will push forward and start to learn about what they can do. But there are some individuals who stay there, who just stay within the anger and feel there's nothing we can do. That's it now, we're controlled. This group have far too much power. We're no match for them. And that's it. And those people stay in that angry place. Now, what's actually happening with those people is they're actually feeding the darker agenda by staying in that angry place, by staying in a place of helplessness and just rebellion. Because those are lower density emotions. They're fear-based emotions, and they feed the darker agenda. So it's okay to move into that anger and that rebellion and that frustration and fear for a while, because it's a trigger to get you moving to the next stage, which is, what can we do about it? Then we find out more knowledge, we learn what we can do, we learn that there is something that can be done, and we do it. Then we take action and we become proactive. So that's really, really important to anyone who has stuck in that place. No one else can teach you, no one else can say to you, look, that something can be done about this, we really can break free from this control. No one can say that to you. You need to experience this for yourself. And just as you learned about the control in the first place, so too can you learn about the ways to free yourself from it. Because the information is there. The information is there for everyone. It's within you and it's within others. So you look for it within others, you read the books, you watch the videos, you see the DVDs, you listen to the speakers, you go to the lectures, and then you move inward and you find the information within yourself as well. And you unlock these levels within you and within the outer life that you're experiencing, and discover the next level to this kind of truth. Another thing that tends to happen when you awaken is you can kind of swing to the opposite. So rather than moving into a state of fear and, oh my goodness me, we're being controlled and there's no way out, these people have got too much power, we don't stand a chance kind of place, other people awaken into, and this is what happened to me, into this fantastic, over-the-top, unbelievable excitement. I used to call it the wow frequency. And again, it's unbalanced. It's certainly a better place to go than the fear and the worry and the believing in the control and feeding the control. But it's still not bringing you into balance. So it's like you have a synchronicity. You see 11-11. Now, when you see 11-11, a good response is that of, ah, great, an 11-11. What was I thinking of at the point that I saw 11-11? Ah, right, okay, that makes sense to me. Thank you. That's quite a good reaction. But the reaction of somebody who is newly awakened will be, wow, I just got an 11-11. Oh my goodness me, wow, an 11-11. And that was how I was when I awakened. Every synchronicity, every sign, I just freak out and go into this unbelievable state of over-the-top excitement. And my guides would slowly say to me, teach me to remain calm. They allowed me to experience this at first, because it was a learning experience. But eventually I realized it wasn't conducive to the spiritual path. The spiritual path is one of steadiness and peace and joy. And when you're in a steadiness, peace, joy, calm place, then you experience bliss as a really high loving frequency that flows through you, giving you healing and making you feel so good. And when you're in that calm centered place, it flows through you, it flows through the energy centers and flows through the chakras, and you feel amazing. When you're saying, wow, oh my goodness me, that's amazing, oh, it's so exciting, wow, wow, you kind of close off the flow But like I said, it's better to go there than it is the other side. And the guides around you do find that quite amusing as well. When I used to get like that, they would laugh and smile at me, but gently show me to center myself. So it's just finding that middle ground. It's kind of like not having too much of a reaction either way. Not fear, panic, anger, feeling betrayed, feeling helpless and controlled. And it's not feeling so way out with excitement and over the top celebratory joy. It's kind of in the center, and it's trying to be peaceful and objective as you flow with it. It's not easy to do, but they are the extremes of reactions you can have when you first awaken. What happens on the wow side of things is you can stay in that place for a few days or even a few weeks with every single synchronicity, like, wow, another synchronicity, oh my goodness. Watch a video like, oh my goodness me, that video really resonates with me. You go there and you're in that place, and that's great, but because you are in a polarity, you can attract the other polarity, and you can kind of have what I called crash downs. So this would happen to me when I first awakened spiritually. I'd be on this unbelievable over-the-top high, quite manic really, I suppose, and then I'd have a crash down and I'd be depressed and down, and I'd go up and down, because I wasn't in the center with my spiritual awakening. When you stay in the center, you don't have a crash down, because you're neither up nor down, you are in the middle, and that's the zero point, that's the central place, that's the focus, that's the point. And that's where you need to be. You operate from that point. It's like an anchor. And everything around you is a spiral. And you're in the middle of that spiral. Your focus, your mind is in the middle of the spiral. And everything around you is part of that. And you can go to the left and to the right. And you can go up and you can go down. And that's the dream time and the exploration and the out-of-body experiences. And the astral projections and the learning and the meditation. You can go into all that. And then you come back to the center, and meditation will take you to that center. And in that center, in that safe zone, in your crystal purple pyramid, then you make your decision. You have your communication and you make your decision, and you say, okay, today I have learnt that, 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 and that. Those two things don't match up with those two things. They actually seem completely opposing. I'm going to make my decision now. And then you take that calm space and you find what resonates with you. And you'll know when you've found the decision that's right for you. You'll know when you've found the truth, because you'll feel that center. The center will kind of tingle or pulsate, vibrate. You'll feel light within. It's like a yes feeling. And you'll be in the center and you'll know. It's a knowing that is beyond belief, beyond questioning, beyond doubt. It is a knowing, and that's when you come to your learning. And then you go off and learn the next level that's being presented to you, or you find the response to your next question. And sometimes you have to revisit that which you learnt 2 weeks ago, or that which you learnt 2 years ago, because you forgot it. It's not easy to cling on to everything and remember everything. Sometimes you remember it and you have this moment of clarity, and then it goes. And then you revisit it. And I learned this before. Yes, I resonated with it then, and it's here again now. And then you learn it again. There's so much to truth. There's so much to the fabric of reality as to what's happening on this planet. It's near enough impossible to hold it all within our human brains at the same time, but we do hold it within our DNA, we do hold it within our cells, so it can always be accessed, even if we've forgotten it in our actual memory bank that we perceive as memory. We can access it through the DNA, through the cells, through the cellular memory. That's always accessible when we come back to the point, when we find the central place. So to anyone listening to this now who is in that fear or anger-based place where you have discovered that you've been controlled all your life, what I would say to you is the guides from the higher densities understand completely how you feel, and there's no judgment for you. There's no judgment for you, no matter what you do, even though if you're out there you might be really angry with those speakers that are coming forward talking about a new unity, a new coming together, a new world, and they speak of peace and bliss, and you're furious because you think, why don't I feel that? They're talking nonsense. There's no judgment. There's no judgment from the higher densities and the beings that reside there. And there should be no judgment from the speakers who are moving within a service to others, love light place either, because they too will have been there at some point and they will understand. How do you break free of that? The first thing you need to do is get into that zero point place, get into that focused place and ask, is there a way out? Is there anything we can do? Is there anything I can do? Me, just little old me, just one person. What could I possibly do against this massive faction of cabal Illuminati groups that have been controlling this planet for years and have extraterrestrial influence? How can I possibly make a difference? Ask that question. Now, if an instant, well, you can't, there's nothing you can do. That's the ego. It's there to help you. It's there for a reason, but it is to be worked with and worked through, because it doesn't communicate from the higher perspective. It communicates from the human perspective, the third density perspective. And we need to accept that it's there and love it, but we need to find the true voice. The true voice of the soul, the voice of the higher self, the oversoul, the collective of guides that exist as us in the future. We need to find that voice. So we ask again, is there anything that I can do regarding this group of beings, this group of humanity that control us and have controlled us for years? Is there really anything I can do? And you really center yourself and listen to the answer. I guarantee you, I promise you, the answer will be yes. There is something you can do. So if you find that central point, the first way to break free, the first step to break free from that place is to get that answer, yes. And when you know that there is something you can do, and not only is there something you can do, there is a timeline where you succeed, a strong timeline where you succeed. Getting stronger every day that you exist, a huge collective of enlightened beings, us, humanity, are there manifesting that timeline. Join them, and that's when you will feel empowered. Well, yes, there is an extremely positive side to what's happening. Rather than being a positive side, there is an entire positive whole aspect, whole reality for us. And I think the main thinking in how to bring about that positive future for us is the fact that we can create what we want. So the first thing we need to do is work out what we want as a collective. Do we want to experience a life, a unity, a planet where there's fairness and equality, where people are not suffering the way that they are now, where we come together, we have equal decisions, we're not controlled by other factions, we are independent co-creators of everything we do? Yes, that reality is very much available to us, it's very close to us. And we can create that. We create that by our thoughts. We can create our individual lives through positive thinking, the law of attraction, understanding how to navigate our timelines. But we can create a future for the entire planet collectively. And as long as there are enough people, which I'm assured there are, and that number is increasing every day, those people together working on this higher collective reality will bring it about. Now, this can be done with our thoughts, as in meditation and other forms of relaxation, so that we're in a centered place, we're in the zero point frequency, and we can put out that which we want to receive back. But we can do this in a proactive way as well. Just little things like, all the little things add up to the big things. Helping someone that is needing help, donating financial help if we can afford it to causes that are going forward into change for this planet for the better. We can help individually, working on ourselves, working on the way we live, looking at growing our own food and being a little bit more self-sufficient. All those things, if everybody made a change in this direction, then everything is then getting better and better and better. Now, on a sort of clairvoyant level, and or in a channeling or telepathic level, however you want to put it, the information that I have from my contacts, and they are, you could call this a collective of higher guidance, you can call this ET contacts, you can call this a higher consciousness space that downloads information into me, whichever way you want to look at it. The information I have is that this positive timeline, this positive future, is just wonderful. I mean, it's so much more loving, and there's so much more harmony and understanding and unity there than there is now. It's like a huge leap into that. And I've seen glimpses of that reality. I've seen glimpses of that reality my whole life. I know many, many others also have seen this reality, this future, and they do. They see this every day. On one level, many of us have actually come back from that reality, if you want to put it that way. On that level, there's no time. But looking at the level where there is linear time, if you want to perceive it, as many of us have come back from the future, from that future reality into this one. So we know it exists. We've lived it. Many, many people have lived it. And I'd just like to explain how it's going to be for us when we are in the knowing that this is what we can achieve, that it exists. It exists. That future exists now, and we can create it. We can bring it here. We are doing that now. Those that want that future can absolutely have that future. And I'll try and explain what it will be like for us. We will feel safe. We will feel happy. We will look forward to every day, every morning that we wake up, we will look forward to what's going to happen that day, and what we're going to learn, and who we're going to meet, and how we are going to create. And we will look forward to going to sleep as well. Going to sleep won't just be, oh, it's the end of the day, now time for bed, good night. Going to sleep is just as much an exciting, positive reality of learning and joy that the waking world is. That they will become one. these realities of us when we're asleep and us when we're awake will become one. We will be able to choose whether we're in the dream state or the waking state in a much more aligned way than we can now. It won't be so separate. The dream time and the waking time won't be such a separate thing. I know it's difficult to understand what that actually means. It doesn't mean we're going to be walking around thinking we're asleep and having dream visions while we're awake. It's not really like that. It's just that we will know the two realities are one. And moving out of our body into astral projections, working with the light body, moving forward and backward in time, moving through dimensions, those things will be second nature to us. Many of us are doing that now in a early capacity, in a learning capacity, like practicing for when we will be able to do this much, much more as second nature. The more you practice in anything, the better you become at that. So this is what we're doing now. We're all learning, we're all practicing, we're all getting ready. I mean, you can look at the abilities that will come to us, if you want to call it that, like bilocation, telepathy, levitation, extreme astral projection, remote viewing, telekinesis, all those things. But it doesn't matter about those things, because those things will be part of us. It won't be a case of, wow, I'm a superhuman now and I've got all these abilities. It will be, this is what we can do now. This is what we can do now in this new reality. We can have fun with this. And it will be work as well. It will be working, but work won't be the way it is now. Work won't be a case of, oh, I've got to go to work and then I'll be home. And it won't be like that. Work will be a creation. It will be a joy. And our relationships with other people will be so much more harmonious and loving and reciprocal, because those that move into this reality will all be on a similar frequency. I mean, there will be those that are learning and those that are teaching, and in another area, those that are learning will be teachers in a different area, and those that are teaching will be learning another area, and we will be all helping each other. At the moment, in the third density, there are a group of people that are sort of leaders in this, if you will, planetary teachers, leading the others through. Once we move into this new dimensional reality, this new dimensional shift, this positive future, the gap between the leaders and the followers will be one. There will be no gap. It all will be leading each other. There will be no leaders and followers. We will all be working together as a co-creating collective. At the moment, the structures on this planet, even within the positive framework, are one of a hierarchy, even though that positive hierarchy is of the light and is very helpful and moves you forward. That's how it is. When we go into this higher dimension, this more positive reality, this new future, it won't be a hierarchy in the same way. The structures will be more of a circle, more of a unity, a oneness, where we are all equal, yet very, very different. On one level, we will be one. We will be part of a collective mind, a telepathic collective mind. But there is a negative and a positive connotation to that. I am talking here specifically about the positive connotation. The positive connotation to this collective mind is unity, understanding, knowing that we are one, knowing that we are one another's family, being able to access our own private thoughts, access the thoughts of others when we want to, and then go higher and access the thoughts of the entire collective when we want to. Because we will have moved into this collective mind, this collective way of thinking, we will also be able to access collective emotional feeling as well. So if we do have a day where we're not feeling in alignment, we're not feeling blissful or open or activated, which will be a rare occurrence in this positive service to others dimension. But there may be times when we do move away from the collective a little bit and lose that activation and that bliss. Once we awaken our ability and our mind to the higher collective, we can then move into the collective bliss that will be operating in abundance all the time and raise ourselves back up. So we will be very, very responsible for our own emotions. If we want to feel joy, excitement, bliss, and I have to say, euphoria, we will feel these things. These emotions are available to us now. We can now reach the collective and wash bliss and euphoria through our bodies at any time. When we're open and we're flowing and we're creative, it's easy for us to do that if we're in that activated space. If we've had a bad day at the moment and we're feeling down, it's not as easy, but it can be done. It can be done. At any time, we can access those emotions now. When we're in this higher dimension, this new future that we are creating, it will be instantaneous. We will be able to access that higher collective consciousness, that higher collective mind. And I'm talking about the collective of all humanity on what will then be a new earth, all the humanity on that earth, the collective consciousness of that can be accessed, and we can allow the blissful, loving energy of that to flow through us. We will also be able to go beyond that collective consciousness of humanity on earth to the higher collective consciousness of the humanity that is beyond earth's boundaries, because we will have a much closer connection with that dimension. Now, we do have that dimension with us now. We have that connection now. The more we access that connection now, and the more of us that access that connection now, the more we create the new reality where we will be able to have that connection with us all the time. So we can wash these feelings through our bodies, through our chakras. We can open our chakras just through the power of our mind, the power of thought, the ability to focus our thought, open our chakras, wash this blissful energy through us. And this will be a matter of course. This will be the way we feel. This will be our natural state of being. It is our natural state of being. This is our natural state of being as humans. But in this reality that we are creating, this positive service to others reality, that will be our natural state of being, washing this positive feeling through us, feeling happiness and feeling bliss. Now, because we have become, will be part of this higher collective consciousness, this oneness, like a collective mind, a collective thought, because we've become part of that, many people perceive that we will lose ourselves, that we will lose our identity. This is not the information I get from the nine. The information I'm given from the nine is we will individualize even more than we are now. The more we are part of the collective in a service to others, positive, loving field, the more we individualize and become more private, more centered, and more aware of who we are. We learn to keep our private space private if we want to. Most of the time in this reality, we won't really need that much private space, because the reason why we need a private psychic space and a private spiritual space and a private mental space and a private emotional space at the moment is because we do not have trust in other. We see other as a potential invader to our space. In this higher reality, in this new reality, we will have trust in other. We will know that others are us, and that they are in alignment with us. They're on our frequency. We will have trust in them. Therefore, we will have little need of private, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical space, because we will enjoy sharing our space. But we will have the ability to have private space if we want to. So we individualize even more. The negative connotation to the collective mind is being controlled, losing your identity, being controlled and having no say, because the collective mind is the one law, the leader, and you have lost who you are. You have lost your input to that collective mind. That is not what I am being shown from the nine. That is not the way it will be in this higher reality. The collective mind is one of absolute freedom and absolute choice. You have free will to join this. Many of us are creating this collective mind now. I myself am part of this collective mind. And within this telepathic field, there are many, many, many people, many humans and ET, higher self presence as well. This is a service to others collective. It's a place that you can access, and there are only service to others telepathic beings in that collective space. Those of a different vibration, those of service to self, they are not there. This is, it's not, they're not able to get there. This is a telepathic collective that's being formed now. It's being formed, it has been formed for quite some time, but the Stargate that opened this ability to move into this collective started around the beginning of 2008. Between January and April of 2008, there was a real coming together, a real collective, and that was when this was really sort of pushed forward, and it's going forward all the time. You only have to look around you. When I say look around you, I don't mean physically look around you. I mean, it's happening on the internet, mostly. There are many groups, websites, communities, all sorts of networking going on the internet. And the majority of these people, or a large percentage of the majority of these people, are in these networks. So it's about navigating and sort of, you know, hunting around and finding the one that feels right to you. And yes, there is a great learning curve going on in these groups. That some of these groups, it's just about having a spiritual argument on a forum. You know, spirituality and ascension means this. No, actually it doesn't. It means this. You can't ascend unless you do that. Well, actually, that's not true. You can only ascend if you do this. That's not what I'm talking about. That is a learning platform as people awaken, or sometimes people kind of get stuck in a place where they're just battling forwards and backwards with ideas. That's not what I mean. There are networking going on of those in this higher telepathic collective that's being formed. As this gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and we raise it higher and higher and higher, and we form it more and more and more as more people join this telepathy, then we create this higher dimension here on Earth. And that's when the higher self ET beings join this collective as well, which they are doing now. But at the moment of the shift, the nine say singularity, 0 point, the galactic lineup, returning to the core of the spiral, this is scheduled for the 21st of December 2012. But I am told by the nine not to focus too much on that date. That's just the date when everything kind of goes central, everything kind of goes. It's the culmination, it's the central point. At that time, that's when a quantum leap takes place. And to some people, it may not seem any different than it is now. And to others, it will seem very different. It really depends on your perception and and the work that you're doing now to prepare. But the actual energy of that zero point, that 21st of December 2012 galactic lineup, return to the core of the spiral, is here now. We're in the rings of the spiral as we go forward. We're in one of the inner rings right now, going forward into the core. And that's a great place to be if we are on this service to others frequency. It's not such a good place to be if we're on the service to self frequency. But then that's a different spiral with a different core. It's like an opposing core that is running in the same space as ours, but with a opposing agenda and an opposing feeling. So, and the telepathy on that level is not a whole telepathy in the same way as it is with us. It's more of a each person in that field will be awakening to on a one-to-one basis with the higher divine instead of on a collective basis with the higher divine. So when you are in the ring, we're in the, sort of one of the inner rings to this spiral right now going forward, on the service to others frequency, and it's so easy to be on that frequency. If that's where you want to be, all you have to do is be nice. Be nice. Be nice to people. Do good things. Help people. And slowly as you do this, you will start to feel good. You will start to feel better and better and better, because there is no greater reward for you than helping another with no agenda. Help others with no need or desire for anything back. It's a service, it's done in service. I mean, eventually, after working in that capacity, things do come back to you. In fact, they come back to you straight away, but you don't do it for that. You do it because, well, those who have come back from this future timeline are doing it because it's in them naturally to do it. They will have done this most of their whole lives. But those who haven't, who've struggled, you can get into the service to others collective. Just help others, be nice, talk to others when they need you to be there for them, share your knowledge, help people. If someone's hurt, help them. It's just all about being there for others, and it's not just about being there for humans, it's about being there for the animals, the plants, the sea life, everything that's part of this earth, and the earth itself. It's about being there for the earth itself and everything. And so you're in service to others at all times while retaining your individuality and knowing when you are unable to give. And then you get to the point where you need to retreat, go back, work on yourself, take your retreat time, center yourself again, heal, come back to center, move back into service to others. It becomes natural. You do it without thinking. And when you're there, when you're in that place, then you are in this inner ring moving towards the core. Now, although the core has got an immense energy to it and it's like a quantum leap that's taking place, the inner rings of this spiral as you go forward to the core each have their own mini quantum leaps as you go towards the final quantum leap. And we're in a ring now. It's now June 2010, and we are in a ring now. And then we will move into the harmonic of that ring, and then there will be another ring, and then we'll move into the harmonic of that ring, and then there'll be another ring until we get to the core. And each ring brings a quantum leap. Each harmonic brings a calm before the storm, reevaluating, learning, moving, and then another quantum leap, another mini quantum leap. So that's where we are now. We're in one now. And if you are in that telepathic collective, you can feel it happening. And when I tune in on that telepathic collective, I tuned in on this collective when I first became aware of it around about mid-2008. Now it's mid-2010, 2 years later. It's vastly grown. It's vastly grown. You can feel it at times, like perhaps when there's a meditation going on, a mass meditation that's perhaps scheduled for a certain day. And the more people that are within this meditation, when you actually go into the meditation, you can see the other people, you can see them, you can communicate with them, you know that they're there, you know that you're all meditating on the same thing. So that's one way, but you can actually feel this just by sitting down, centering yourself and saying, okay, I'm going to access the higher telepathic collective of service to others, positive polarization within that ring, and then you can feel them all. And that is the way to find out where we're going. That's the way to see the positive future when you're there, when you're in that. Because the people that are in this space are extremely intelligent, extremely loving, extremely funny, marvelous sense of humor. They are all such interesting people, each one individually having an amazing story to tell. They could write 100 books and still have a story to tell. Every single one of these people, every single one of them. They are scientists, researchers, artists, musicians, mothers, children, actors, writers, dancers. They are extremely creative. They each have their own idea of what they can do to improve their own lives, the lives of those they love, and the lives of everyone on this planet and beyond. They each have these ideas, and they're doing it. And one of the greatest, greatest, greatest things about this future is the romantic love that's within it as well. Outside of the unity and the unconditional love that we have in a brother-sister-soul connection, there are these relationships that are coming together and working together in this frequency. The nine refer to this as the twin flame frequency. Now, the twin flame frequency is somewhat misunderstood throughout a lot of the teachings available, but that's okay because it's all a learning curve. But there are many, many people out there, and I have emails, well, most days, and when I see my individual clients, people that come to me, not clients, but people that come to me, one of the main questions asked is, where is my twin flame? And will I meet my twin flame? And is this person my twin flame? Now, the twin flame frequency is a frequency. It's a vibration. It's a feeling. It's an emotion, and it creates a situation in our lives. It creates an activation in our lives. You can embody the twin flame frequency and still be a single person and not be in a relationship, but you still feel as though you are in love. You know, go back to when you were younger and when you first fell in love, when you had your first love, your first crush. It's kind of like that, but without all the drama and the negative side. It's the positive side of being in love. It's like that, but you are in love with the universe, the frequency, the planet. You're in love with yourself. You are in love with love. You're in love with everything that's happening. And when you kind of move into that, when that starts happening to you, it may happen unconsciously or you may create it. Either way, it's available for everybody. When you're in this higher collective telepathic union that we have with others that are like us, the romantic love there is very much one of freedom. It's one of, well, there is no restrictions, basically, on this love. And when you move into that and you're feeling it each day, even though you're single, you are attracting it to you in the most polarized way that it would manifest in third density reality or even in a higher density reality. And that is the relationship with other the one and the one, and this can be a actual incarnated male and an incarnated female. This can be two incarnated females. This can be two incarnated males. This is not specific to our actual gender. And I know that this is a big issue with a lot of people, but especially because of religion and what they say about homosexuality, but the nine have shown me that this is not about our actual gender. It is, but there can be two people of the same gender in opposing twin flame frequencies and still have that union. So basically, if you're a homosexual, you can still have a twin flame union. It's exactly the same. There's no judgment on that. You have choice. You can be heterosexual, you can be homosexual. It's your choice. And there is no judgment from the higher realms on that at all. It's embraced because it goes back on so many levels. Homosexuality goes back on so many levels to past incarnations, future incarnations. There's reasons for it. There's a lot of reasons for it. And while it may have a negative aspect to it, it also has a positive aspect to it as well, like everything does. So when you're in this twin flame frequency, regardless of whether you're heterosexual or not, in this frequency, you attract to you the matching polarity, and you feel it, and you're in love, and then it manifests for real. So what's happening in this collective at the moment is these twin flame relationships are coming together. What this is the actual true twin flame frequency is within you. It's you. You embody it as a single person, not in a relationship. You're in a relationship with the higher self aspect, and you would perceive that as the opposite gender to you, or the opposite polarization to you, because you are matter, you are physicality, and your true twin flame is antimatter and is higher dimensional and is out of physicality, and that is your twin flame. And that isn't just an upward line where you're here and the twin flame is there. That's one aspect of it. It's an upward line, a downward line, a sideways line, and then it goes out diagonally and it goes out this way, and it's like an entire spiral around you, like a series of spirals and wheels. And just like we're moving to this core, and we are now in a inner ring, we have all that in us as well. So from that place, we embody the twin flame in all of those. It's easier to perceive it as us being in physicality and the twin flame to be up, but it's actually all around us. So we embody the twin flame within ourselves. When we meet another person that we have romantic feelings for, that we're attracted to, or that we have a spiritual connection with, and there are signs and all sorts of synchronicities, and when we have that, that person is mirroring our own twin flame frequency. So they mirror our twin flame frequency. On another level, if they are the person we move into a relationship with, they become a destined partner, a destined working partner, or partner of destiny. So that's the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing, but it's within that twin flame frequency. So when you say, oh, I'm looking for my twin flame, your twin flame is yourself. Your twin flame is your higher self. What you are wanting to attract into your life is a matching romantic relationship that mirrors your twin flame. Then that person becomes the mirror to the twin flame, the mirror to you. So yes, you can call it a twin flame. But it's misunderstood, because a lot of people feel that the spiritual path and the ascension path is all about finding the twin flame, or they feel that being with the twin flame is the most important thing. And it isn't, because the most important thing is taking this planet, taking Earth and everything around Earth and all the frequencies around Earth and the entire time-space field around Earth and all the spirals around Earth. It's taking that forward into this higher dimensional service to others, ascended, polarized place, polarized frequency, reality. That's kind of number one for us at the moment. And when we do embrace the twin flame, there is an amazing amount of romantic love there, and passion, and oneness, and joy, and everything you've ever dreamed of, that you've ever wanted in a partner, it's there for you. But that's also not the number one. It's like when you're working spiritually, number one is to be in service. Number two, or the secondary goal, is to bring in financial help or some other kind of energy exchange so that you can go forward and work. But the number one is the service to the whole. And it's the same with the romantic relationship. Number one is the service to the whole, and the romance and the love and the passion and the joy and the unity and the wow, this is what I've waited for my whole life. All that is a secondary thought to the number one, which is that of service. So a true twin flame partnership, which will be the male and the female, or the male and the male, the female and the female, that true twin flame relationship is a working partnership. And within this telepathic collective of those that are embracing it now and have been since the beginning of 2008 and before, but especially since 2008 and very much in 2010 as well, those people within that are many twin flame relationships coming together. And whether you're in a relationship or whether you're single, you can access that frequency through them, because their love, their unity, their working relationship, their understanding of divinity within each other and with the whole is placed within this consciousness field for us all to access. So when we go there, when we're in that place, we can look and think, my goodness me, look at that twin flame couple. Oh, don't they love each other? Oh my goodness me, obviously we're not tuning in on their privacy, but we can see the frequency that they give out. And we think, oh my goodness me, that is just lovely. Look at it. And we can feel it in us. And this is where we're going. All of us. Every single one of us. And then there will come a time when all of those in that frequency are within the twin flame frequency. The minority, at the moment, it's the minority that are actually in the twin flame relationship. Others are just coming into that, but they're moving into the twin flame relationship within themselves, but they haven't necessarily manifested this in an actual physical relationship. They're in the minority. But when we move into this higher reality, when we finally get to the core and move forward within these rings, we have this large quantum leap. When we get there, the majority of us will be in actual twin flame relationships. And when that occurs, the higher consciousness will be full of twin flame relationship, full of people in love. So not only are they in love with the divinity, the higher consciousness, the ET presence, the whole of humanity, Earth, they're working for this, they're teaching this, they're living it, they're also all in love. They've all got really good whole relationships with mutual respect, freedom, passion, joy, oneness, and they're all there. And when you go into that telepathic place, you can feel it, and then you bring it into you, and you embody it, and you then create it for yourself. Now, that's a very powerful vibration when the collective are all standing together in that service to others place, in that service to others reality with their twin flame. It's very powerful. So in 2010, we're not quite ready to embrace that level at this point, because we are slowly opening our fields to allow more light in, more light in, more love in, more love in. Light, love, love, light. That's all coming in. So we're opening slowly as we embrace it. Some of us can hold more. Others are only just holding a little, but we're all going with this wave. When the twin flames, those that embody each other's twin flames, come together in that place, then this really does take the love and the light frequency up hugely. By the time we get there in our chronological linear time, 21st of December 2012, the core, the quantum leap, we will be ready to embrace this higher level love. And there will be levels to this wave. So some will embrace the full telepathic collective consciousness of humanity and the ET presence at once. Others will embrace a smaller percentage of that. Others will embrace a smaller percentage of that. But each one will be there. And like spirals, like rings, we will move into this. So that is why I say, or rather the nine tell me, and this is what I've been teaching for the last couple of years, is on one level, this is happening, this entire ascension process is happening because it's a natural evolution. It's a natural evolution that happens to every planet, every being. It's the way it is. It's natural. And it will happen even if there were no humans on this planet. So on one level, that's what's happening. On the other level, we are creating it. And they may seem opposing, but they're actually one and the same. We're creating it. It's a natural evolutionary process. It's one and the same, simultaneously, because we are the microcosm of the macrocosm, and the microcosm and the microcosm are one. What we have in our bodies, in our cells, in our DNA, is a mirror to the cosmos. So it's done individually. I mean, many people will say to me, how can I make a difference? Just me, just one person. How can I make a difference? Well, absolutely you can, because you embody the entire cosmos within you. So you make a big difference. Every person that joins that higher telepathic collective strengthens it. It creates more love, more light for us to access. So we can go there now. We can go there now because it's already formed. I mean, it's there. It's not something that's going to happen. I mean, it's there now. It's there now, today. And we can go there and we can raise ourselves and, okay, I'd like to experience the higher collective, service to others, telepathic union that consists of the higher consciousness collective mind of the activated humanity that is there. The starseeds, the light workers, the wanderers, the rainbow children, the indigo children. And we can feel, we can look and think, some babies and some children and, oh, there's a planetary teacher, he's quite famous at the moment, you know, putting himself out there, so is she. Well, she's written a book, and we might not be able to specifically see who they are, or we might be able to see some of them, but it's not about their seeing them individually, it's about the entire collective that they create when they move into this place. This is where we are going, and it is just fantastic. It really is. And the nine tell me that to be here on Earth at this time, moving through this process, is extremely sought after throughout the entire galaxy and beyond that. There have been beings wanting to incarnate here as human for the last 20 years, longer, because they knew what was coming, and especially in the last 20 years. And yes, some of those have come in on a negative frequency and they are hoping to change to a positive frequency. Some have come in on a positive frequency and may have lost their way and may be currently in a negative frequency. But the point is, being here right now on planet Earth is an extremely sought after by the beings that are throughout our galaxy and beyond. Those that want to incarnate here have been vast. So if you're here now, incarnated, it's a position of privilege, it's a position of humility, but it's, well, basically it's exciting. It's a great ride, it's wonderful, and I know there's a lot of negativity out there about this process, and yes, take it on board. As I've said before so many times, take it all on board, research as much as you can. Read everything, look at everything, go within, do your meditations, but ultimately the way to create, or the way to get into that current creation that's already been created within the loving, happy, joyful frequency of success and abundance and having everything you want, everything you could desire is there for you. And it's not there because you're spoiled and you demand it. It's there because you deserve it. It is all you. It is your right to have this beautiful existence where you are safe and loved and where you feel joy and where you are not in restriction, where you do not go without, where you are not controlled. It is your right to have this. It is your right. On other planetary systems, that is how it is. And it will be, and it is becoming that way for us here. And it's a very, very, very positive future that we have waiting for us. Very, very positive. So just enjoy it. Have fun. Thank you for joining me today in our sacred circle. I wish you much love and happiness and joy upon your spiritual path, and more importantly, upon your ascension path. Know that I am always with you in that telepathic union, together as we go forward and make changes in our reality, raising from a third dimension to a fifth dimensional structure. Much love, many blessings. Namaste.